sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, July 5th, 2020. Life and Times. Do you really need to buy organic produce? Levi Stone, RN-MSN, Chief Nursing Officer. Did you know only 12% of Americans eat the standard daily requirements of fruits and vegetables? That means many of you reading this post fall into the other 88%, struggling to get enough fruits and veggies into your dietary goals. One of the biggest questions is whether or not to buy organic produce. The simple answer is yes and no. One of the best ways to determine if and what you should definitely go organic on is outlined by the Environmental Working Group, EWG. Each spring, the EWG publishes its list of the Dirty Dozen and Clean 15 to help consumers make the best choices when it comes to buying produce. Since there are many variables, such as pesticides, chemicals, and other residues that are known or have potential impacts to our health, not all produce is created equal. However, you don't have to go full organic to ensure you've made the safest choice when purchasing produce. This is where the Dirty Dozen and Clean 15 come into play. This year's ranking of pesticide contamination considers 47 different fruits and vegetables based on 43,000 plus data points generated by the USDA as well as the Food and Drug Administration. Here are the 12 grocery store finds that the EWG say had more pesticide residues than all others. This is where you really need to go organic with your purchases. Strawberries, by far the top. Always go organic if you can. Spinach, kale, nectarines, apples, grapes, peaches, cherries, pears, tomatoes, celery, potatoes. Inversely, the Clean 15 are foods with the lowest amount of pesticide residues found on their surfaces. These are among the choices you don't necessarily have to go organic with, as they are typically a safe bet, regardless of the process they are grown. Avocados, sweet corn, pineapple, onions, papaya, sweet peas, frozen, eggplant, asparagus, cauliflower, cantaloupes, broccoli, mushrooms, cabbage, honeydew melon, kiwi. Groceries are expensive and organic offerings often cost more than other options. Stretching your hard-earned dollars to make more informed choices can still have you and your family eating healthier without breaking the bank. Hope this helps in planning future grocery store and farmers market shopping tips, lists, and trips while saving a few extra bucks as well. Levi Stone. UTPB lecturer digs into pop artist's past by Ruth Campbell, R-C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L at OAOA.com. What started out as a possible dissertation idea for UTPB lecturer Diane Jordan has grown into a quest to write the best biography of her friend, the late artist Harold Stevenson. Stevenson is from her home area of Ida Belle, Oklahoma, and rubbed shoulders with people like pop artist Andy Warhol and abstract expressionist Jackson Pollock. Jordan started digging into Stevenson when she went back to school to work on her PhD while working for UTPB. My research area is qualitative research methods, and one of our assignments was to go do an oral history project, a one-hour oral history project with someone interesting in your community. I thought, you know what, I think I'm going to do that artist, Harold Stevenson. So I did, and after talking to him for an hour, I realized this was a lifelong project, and I actually wanted to do my dissertation on him, but my advisor said do the dissertation on something easier that you can get done because this project is too big for a dissertation, Jordan recalled. Even though I didn't like the answer, she was right. So I spent the next 4 years just talking to Harold and finishing my dissertation, and that's when I got back on the project, Jordan added. While interviewing Stevenson at his little cabin in the woods in Idabel, she noticed a breakfast bar with photos on it. He was 83 when I met him, and I would ask him who the people were in the pictures, because obviously these were important people to him, and one of them was him and a young girl. They were like teenagers, 13, 14 years old, maybe. And he said, "Oh, this is Alta Fly. She was my best friend, and I met her at art camp at Beaver's Bend." And so I wrote that down and Googled Alta Fly, Jordan said. She got Fly's phone number and called her on a lark. Jordan told Fly she understood that she was a friend of Harold Stevenson. And she starts to cry. I thought, oh no, I've said something wrong. I've embarrassed her. I shouldn't have called. So I immediately apologized. I'm so sorry I've called you. I won't bother you again. And she goes, oh no, honey, you don't understand. You are an angel. I have been diagnosed with breast cancer and given 6 months to live, and I am cleaning out my apartment, and I have a box of letters, Jordan said. The letters started in the 1940s and went on into the 2000s. Fly and Stevenson had been corresponding since art camp. That FedEx box arrived on my porch, and that's how I really got to know Harold was reading all of her letters, and through that, she, Fly, became a professional photographer, Jordan said. Fly would attend as many of Stevenson's exhibits as she could and take photos, Jordan said. They would write back and forth, and he would basically send her a diary of his life, Jordan said. Stevenson would include exhibition catalogs, announcements, and flyers from the 50s and 60s before it was even called pop art. Jordan said Stevenson would tell Fly that Andy Warhol had a show or painter Robert Rauschenberg. So that's how I got to know him. Then I started contacting his other friends. I went to the nursing home and talked to his high school classmates, and they would say, wait right here, and come back with their high school yearbook from when they were sophomores and Harold did all the artwork for it, Jordan said. She interviewed people all over the country. But to learn more about Stevenson, she went to his hometown where most people who knew him still lived. They would invite me to their homes and show me a painting that had been hanging on their wall since 1947, Jordan said. The paintings might not have been valuable financially, but emotionally, every one had a wonderful story, she said. Once, when he was home from his world travels, Jordan said one of Stevenson's neighbors was robbed. Stevenson gave the woman a painting and said, "This will make you feel better." Jordan said she found 52 paintings for a collection and was hoping to find 30. There were probably at least 100 because some people owned more than one that he'd given them through the different years. He painted for 80 years. He was a child artist. Several of the paintings, half a dozen of them, are before he even got out of high school. The earliest was from when he was 7 years old, Jordan said. Part of Stevenson's story, she said, is about art and community. There are probably artists in your community that people don't even know of. People don't appreciate their local artists sometimes, she added. Stevenson painted princes, princesses, movie stars, United Nations ambassadors, and dated some of the most prominent men in the world. Stevenson was anti-establishment, which is what Jordan said a lot of musicians and artists are. They have this story to tell that may not jibe with the politically correct story, and they have an alternative voice. Harold was pretty much banned from the establishment. That's the reason he's not known as much as the other pop artists is, because his work is nearly all in private collections, Jordan said. Some are in museums, but most of his work was owned by private collectors, like the late architect Philip Johnson, who served on the board of the Museum of Modern Art, and the late film director and screenwriter Billy Wilder. Jordan said some of Stevenson's work is in museums as well. But Jordan said Stevenson wanted more people to have access to art. He did do a lot of large pieces. Most of his pieces were large, but he also did some very small things, Jordan said. He hung the bullfighter on the Eiffel Tower. He had permission to do it. It made the front page of the Paris newspapers. It stopped traffic, she said. This was when you could still drive by before they blocked it off. It was causing such a traffic commotion that after 4 days they had to take it down. Some of the discussion was, why did an American artist get the privilege of being the first, as far as I know, the only artist to use the Eiffel Tower as their display canvas? But they had it all worked out with the officials and the police, so he was able to do that. Because Jordan had been interviewing Stevenson so long and working on his biography, people called her when he died because she was the only person they could find who was connected to him. That's when I realized it's every researcher's dream is to do something that nobody else is doing. Nobody was researching Harold Stevenson. As it turned out, honestly, I think I'm the best person for that because I'm from here. I'm a member of this community. I grew up in the little town 12 miles up the road from him, so I knew him. I know the people here, Jordan said. Because she's local, people trust her. Jordan said others from around the world and large cities have tried to write about Stevenson, but people in his hometown don't trust them. With all the information she has gathered, Jordan plans to write a biography of Stevenson. She still teaches full-time online classes in sociology and music and society for UTPB. His family wanted to protect Stevenson's life and legacy. My goal is to tell Harold's best story. He was ignored in his career. That's a whole other topic as to why nobody's heard of him. He's got paintings in very famous places and nobody knows who he is, Jordan said. Asked about a timeline for the book, Jordan said the problem is she keeps finding more information. So I haven't given myself a timeline, but it's because you only get one shot at the best biography. So I want to make that I'm done before I quit, she said. Jordan has been with UTPB for 15 years. She started out in Odessa in 2005. Her husband was working in the oil and gas industry, so she was teaching on campus back then. I was going to quit because I was going to move back to my hometown of Broken Bow, and they said, we're doing this new thing called online learning. This is 15 years ago, and here I still am, still teaching, Jordan said. UTPB Associate Professor of Art Chris Stanley said in a text message that he was excited about Jordan's research. I love how art helps us understand both the secular and the sublime. It comes to a greater audience when other areas of study examine what artists do in their professional practice, Stanley stated in a text message. Dr. Jordan's passion for unlocking the story of Harold Stevenson will help complete original part of the more profound story of 20th century art. I am personally hoping for greater collaborations with the faculty and students in sociology as a result of this research, Stanley added. Master Gardeners. Garden teas add nutrients back into the soil, by Debbie Rowland, Master Gardener. Compost tea, worm compost tea, and fertilizer tea, what is the difference? Compost tea is simply the liquid that drips from your composter while your compost bin makes compost. It is strong and should be diluted before using. Worm compost tea is the extra liquid from your red wiggler worm bin and should also be diluted before use. Fertilizer tea, also referred to as garden tea, can be made several different ways. The best definition I found is a concentrated liquid fertilizer made from steeping plants in aerated water. Garden teas can be made from any healthy plant that grows in your yard, even weeds. Finally, a use for dandelions. They are full of vitamins A and C, along with calcium and potassium. Grass works great, too. Grass clippings are high in nitrogen and potassium. Collect your clippings next time you mow the lawn. Fill a 5-gallon bucket half full of clippings, add water, and steep, stirring daily. You will want to cover with screen or landscape fabric to be sure you don't grow a crop of mosquitoes. Another way is to use pieces of healthy plants you are trimming or removing. Cut them into manageable pieces and put in a 5-gallon bucket. When the bucket is half full of plant material, fill the bucket to the top with water. Rainwater is best. I have had good luck adding alfalfa pellets at this point as well. Alfalfa is high in nitrogen, vitamin A, folic acid, potassium, and calcium. Stir daily to aerate. After 2 weeks, strain out the solids and use as a fertilizer. Plants remove the nutrients from your soil by making this tea. The nutrients can be leached out of the plant and added back into the soil. For more information, call the AgriLife office at 498-4071 in Odessa or at 686-4700 in Midland, or visit aggiehorticulture.tamu.edu or westtexasgardening.org. We are an educational service organization of volunteers trained by Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service. Visit westtexasgardening.org. Texas Master Gardeners. Rose rosette can devastate your garden, by Jeanette Castanone. Rose rosette is a devastating virus once it reaches your rose garden. There is no cure or treatments on the market besides pulling out infected shrubs. It is important to know what to look out for to ensure that you do not devastate your rose garden by further spreading this plant disease. Rose rosette virus is the viral pathogen that causes rose rosette disease. We do have rare occurrences of it here in the Permian Basin. Symptoms to look out for are abnormal reddening of leaves and stems, unusual rubbery thorns, deformed leaves, and witch's broom. Rose rosette can only replicate inside of living plant cells. The virus is transmitted by a small areophyid mite. The mites are easily spread through the wind, and the mite can also walk to neighboring plants. The mite acquires the virus by feeding on infected plants. Disease transmission occurs more often in the summer. The virus is systemic and will infect the entire plant. There are no known control treatments for roses infected with the virus, and all cultivars seem to be susceptible. When symptoms appear, rule out possible mimics, such as nutritional deficiencies, as well as chemical burr. You can submit a sample to the Plant Diagnostic Clinic at Texas A&M. The form can be found online at plantclinic.tamu.edu. Early detection is the key. If you see symptoms and want to remove the plant, make sure to place a large trash bag over the plant to reduce the spread of the mite. Always sanitize your tools. The virus can spread through unsanitary pruning practices. Much of the research on the virus is ongoing, As new information is discovered, recommendation practices may change. For more information, call the AgriLife office at 498-4071 in Odessa or 686-4700 in Midland, or visit aggiehorticulture.tamu.edu or westtexasgardening.org. Jeanette Castanone. Castanone is a horticulturist with Texas AgriLife Extension Service. She can be reached at 686-4700 or by email at Jeanette, J-E-A-N-E-T-T-E, dot Castanone, C-A-S-T-A-N-O-N, at ag.tamu.edu. Pets of the Week. Bo, a three-month-old male kitten, needs to be adopted into a good home. Bo is solid white with blue eyes and looks to be short-haired. Bottom photo, Landry, a one-year-old male Jack Russell mix, needs to be adopted into a good home. Landry is tan and white with black eyeliner. To adopt Bo or any of the other pets at the Humane Society of Odessa, stop by 7012 Mockingbird Lane, call 381-5503, or visit www.odessahumanesociety.org, or leave a message at facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa/. The Humane Society of Odessa is a no-kill pet adoption shelter, and all their pets require spay-neuter contract along with an adoption application. Adoption fees for pets start at $50. Odessa Spring Break and Axle honors their employees for 120 years combined service. Odessa Spring Break and Axle Incorporated has been in business for over 83 years, since 1938, and we are proud to honor the loyalty of the following employees for their dedication and longevity with our company. Jesse Vaught is a service department technician and has 15 years of dedicated service from 2005 to 2020. Robert R. Kiefer is our service department foreman and has 20 years of dedicated service from 2000 to 2020. James A. Henderson, Jr. is our parts manager and has 40 years of dedicated service from 1980 to 2020. Jerry R. Hanks is our president and general manager and has 45 years of dedicated service from 1975 to 2020. We thank our excellent team at Odessa Spring Break and Axle for their dedication to outstanding service and customer satisfaction.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, July 5th, 2020, Hometown Dance Studio by Royal McGregor. Though she was taking business classes at Odessa College, Aliyah Robinson knew, regardless if she had a diploma or not, what profession she wanted to pursue. The 22-year-old, who graduated from Permian High School in 2017, wanted to open her own dance studio. Robinson began that process in February, and about 5 months later, she's scheduled to open for her first classes on Monday at her studio called Hip Hop and Leto's. "I'm really excited because it's actually going to be open," Robinson said. "I'm more excited than nervous." During a phone interview, Robinson said she began dancing when she was 4 years old. She said she danced for Shout Cheerleading by Welton Blaylock, and then was a cheerleader at Permian. She also dances for the West Texas Pride and West Texas Drillers. Robinson said she knew dancing was an important part of her life, and now it will be her main source of income, as running the studio is going to be her full-time job. I've danced my whole life, so there was nothing else that I was really interested in doing, Robinson said. I was going to school for business, but I was dancing at the same time. I put more time into dancing than going to school because I like to dance more than I like to do anything else. As far as hiring employees, Robinson enlisted the help of her older and younger sisters, 22-year-old Deja Robinson and 19-year-old Jada Robinson, as instructors. Deja said she's more excited than nervous for the dance studio to open. I'm very proud of her, she said. She has been dancing ever since she can walk, basically. I know this is something that she's been wanting to do, so I'm very proud and supportive of her. Jada Robinson explained that she's eager to dance alongside her two older sisters. It's a very cool thing that we've all been dancing for a long time, so it won't be anything new for us, but to actually be the teachers now, it's great, she said. Alaya Robinson also asked 21-year-old Alicia Blaylock, who is the daughter of dance instructor Welton Blaylock, to join Hip Hop and Lettos. Alicia said it was a no-brainer to join the newest dance studio in Odessa. I was excited from the moment Alaya Robinson told me she was thinking about it, Alicia Blaylock said over the phone. I was pushing her to do it. If anyone is going to be successful doing it, she is the perfect person for it. With her first set of classes set for Monday, Alaya said she had added extra precaution when dealing with the coronavirus. Robinson said during the phone interview that masks won't be worn during classes, but social distancing during routines can be practiced. Robinson also explained the studio will be sanitized after each practice. I'll have a limit on how many people can be in each class, Robinson said. I have a really large studio, so I shouldn't have too many problems with that.
Hello, this is Michael reading Tumbleweed Smith's column, published Saturday, July 4th, 2020, from the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Local spelunker says Sonora is among state's most beautiful caves. Midlander Bill Bentley belongs to a spelunking group that explores Texas caves and has been in dark places beneath Texas for 40 years. I went with some friends back in May of 1980 into some caves near Carlsbad, New Mexico. While we were caving that weekend, I got bit by the cave bug. He's been to a bunch of caves, mostly in Texas and eastern New Mexico, but also in Missouri, Arkansas, and other states. He has had some interesting adventures. I've seen some awfully pretty places. It's really exciting to find what is called virgin passage, when your eyes are the first ones to ever view a new cave or a new area of an established cave. It's a thrill to know that no other human has ever looked at what you're seeing. That's when the exploring really pays off. He says Midland is a good place for cavers because you can go 200 miles in almost any direction to find lots of caves. New Mexico's Lincoln National Forest has some of what I call world-class caves. They're highly decorated and extremely deep. You have to have ropes to get in and out. Bill admits that one of the most beautiful caves in Texas is Sonora Caverns. It gets loads of tourists, especially in the summer, because people are looking for a cool place. It's also warmer than the outside temperature in winter. It's not as deep as some of the caves Bill has visited. There's a place in Carlsbad Caverns called Lake of the Clouds. It's the lowest point in Carlsbad Caverns, somewhere around 1,100 feet. Rocks are arranged to look like clouds, and there's water all around below. It's a beautiful area. It's also quite warm because we're closer to the center of the earth. Bill has discovered some new caves. Caves are being found all the time. I've found three or four in my 40 years of exploring. Down in Terrell County,